Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, fellow Ridiculous Historians. My name is Ben. My co-host, Noel, who usually fills in here with me, is on adventures. However, never fear, because we have our returning special guest with us here today, Christopher Hasiotis. Thanks again for saving the show.
Good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning. I really have no idea what time it is. We're here in the studio. A fake sun outside, a fake moon. I think that's just Casey's face shining in, beaming in a rays of goodness.
The radiant face of super producer Casey Pegram. Thank you, Casey. We need your light for this episode because things are about to get very, very dark.
Yeah, Ben, let me set the stage for you. It's a gloomy evening. You're in the northern reaches of Europe. The sun doesn't get too high. The clouds get low. The light even lower. You're sitting by the water. By a fjord, maybe, because you're in Norway. And just in the distance, you start to see a shadow coming. It's moving. It's on the water. It's listing from side to side. It's a ship. It's a dark ship. It's a big ship. But there's something different about this ship. The sails are slightly tattered. There doesn't seem to be much life on board. Ben, what you're looking at is a ship of death. And that's what I'm going to tell you for right now. I just creeped myself out a little bit.
Wow, that was great.
There's a ship of death coming towards you. Let's rewind a little bit and get a little context.
Yeah, let's rewind. Sorry, I was spellbound, man. Casey, did you like that?
I was wrapped with attention over here, yeah.
Casey on the case, that was great. Yes, let's step back just a tad here.
Yeah, why are we talking about Norway now, and when are we talking about?
Right, why and when? Two very important questions for this show.
Whom? Mm-hmm. Wherefore?
So,
whence?
Whence? Whither?
I'm gonna toss them all to you, man.
Oh, don't forget whither. I feel like whither needs to get
whither the point of this story.
yes to the very same Christopher. So we are traveling back to the 14th century, to the 1300s. If you are, you know, on some level aware of European history at the time, then you will have heard of the catastrophic fatal affliction known today as the Black Death. From the years 1346 to 1353, this spread across the European continent. The name only came several centuries later. We called it the Black Death or the Black Plague as a retronym, but Genoese merchant ships brought this plague to Sicily in the early 1340s, and no one was quite prepared for the magnitude of damage that this and havoc that this thing would wreak.
Yeah, I mean the bubonic plague, as it's more technically known, because one of the symptoms are these buboes or growths that infected people get, and it's just got such a magnificently high mortality rate. And when a human contracts a disease, you have about a couple days for it to show up, a couple days of symptoms, and then you die. It's a miserable, miserable way to go. The plague and the time we're talking about in the middle of the 14th century was generally regarded as the first Black Death and Black Plague.
Right.
Europe, the Middle East, Northern Africa, parts of Western Asia, all kind of experienced different waves, and then there was a bigger return of the plague in kind of the 1700s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wiped out massive portions of the population. Estimates are really hard to come by, and sometimes things are inflated. population counts aren't as accurate, but if you said a third of the population of Europe died over the span of time, that's pretty right on.
Right, yeah. Nowadays, we can reasonably guess that this was caused by a bacterium called Yersinia pestis. This resulted in several different forms of plague. And our best guess for the origin point of this affliction is somewhere in Central Asia, in the dry plains of Central Asia, traveling along the Silk Road, reaching Crimea in the, as you said, the mid 14th century. Most likely, it was carried by not rats, but the fleas living on the rats, technically black rats, that traveled on these merchant ships, which was one of the most efficacious. If you wanted to spread a disease internationally at this time, spreading it via a merchant ship is brilliant. You could not have planned it better if you were trying to.
You know, so there's this concept of rats being plague bearers and carrying this pestilence. But I believe, and our good friends at HowStuffWorks.com may have dug into this in the past, that there's something is ringing a bell in deep in my memory that there's been some research done that it was actually not rats that originated the Black Plague, kind of rodent zero, if you will. But it was more something like a squirrel or a chipmunk or something much cuter, but still more sinister.
Yeah, okay. That, you know what? I could see that because the flea would probably not discriminate. And a lot of, historically, a lot of human leisure time has been spent vilifying rats.
Yeah. Well, what I will do is I will dig into the archives at HowStuffWorks.com. Mm-hmm. And when I figure that out, I will share that on Ridiculous Historians, the Facebook group for this podcast that you're listening to right now. If you guys are not on Facebook, let me just switch from death and disease mode to promotional and social media mode. Point your machines over towards Facebook and look at Ridiculous Historians. You can chat with Ben. You can chat with Noel. Casey's there. Sometimes I'm around. Mm-hmm. I was just sharing info about stories, but I will post a link to that story over there on the site.
Thank you so much, Christopher.
Trying to find some light in this this grim, grim tale.
This is a very grim, grim tale. And we know that the disease itself appears to be ancient. We have some fairly compelling arguments that it hit parts of the world and the human population way before the 1300s. In How Stuff Works, by our own, in an article by our own Tracy Wilson, good friend of ours, good friend of the show, one of the hosts of Stuff You Missed in History Class. In her work on How Stuff Works, she notes that Justinian's plague from 542 to 546 AD was thought to be one of the pandemics caused by, you know, the bubonic plague or the Black Plague. As you said, Christopher, this thing, when it strikes, strikes hard, it strikes fast. It doesn't tick all the boxes for a perfect disease, because a perfect disease would hopefully have a longer gestation rate such that it allows for more infections. And this thing was knocking people down left and right. So we mentioned Norway, right? When we mention Norway, we need to talk a little bit about the cycle of infection for this disease. So plague was spread considerable distances by these rats on these ships. And the first thing you would think is, well, how long does a rat live in the wild? How long does a rat live running for its life in a ship, right? Where it's probably going to be maybe tolerated, but killed if the opportunity presents.
Swept overboard, tossed in a bag.
Eaten.
Yeah, eaten.
Worst comes to worst. So these rats would and did die at a pretty high rate.
Right. I mean, they had plague.
They had the plague. That's a really good point. But their fleas would survive, and they would find new rat hosts wherever they landed, because docks were dirty, filthy places that were home to lots of, like, rats and insects and other animals.
A lot of things for all of those things to eat.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And those rats would die. But then the fleas who lived on them didn't necessarily die, and they needed a new place to live. And when you're on a ship, if you don't have the rats to live on, who are you going to jump to?
People, whatever the next warm mammal is.
Yeah, you and me and old Swabby over there on
the deck. Oh, your pony from the previous episode?
My pony's name is not Swabby. My pony does not swab the deck. Although, you know what? Actually, maybe she does. I think if we could train a pony to tie a mop to her tail and swab decks and avoid the plague, I'm down with that.
All right, let's
listeners, if you don't know what we're talking about, and if this is your first episode of Ridiculous History, go check out our most previous episode where we talked about something a little more lighthearted than boils and pustules and death, where we talked about ponies and princesses.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little more fun.
Yes.
A lot more fun. It's always fun being here with you, Ben and Casey.
Thanks, man. And Noel, of course, is here in spirit.
He doesn't have to deal with boils and pustules and black death and rats and fleas and scratching and itching and bleeding and creepy ghost ships.
I don't know that. I don't know what he's doing.
That's true. Yeah.
He might be.
Noel's idea of a vacation is very different than mine, I have found over the years.
That's quite true. So speaking of what we could call Noel's idea of a vacation— the bubonic plague, at least at the time of this particular wave of plague, this particular pandemic, people didn't have, for instance, germ theory, the idea of washing one's hands, the idea that infections could be carried by a life form as small as to be invisible to the naked eye. It was an alien concept, you know, and a lot of what we would consider medical treatment at this time was fundamentally intertwined with religious belief.
That's true. But while the specifics of transmission of bubonic plague weren't known to people at the time, there was knowledge that people would transmit it from person to person, perhaps from animal to person, not knowing how, but knowing that it did happen. And so word of plague spread before plague itself spread necessarily. And so a lot of these communities, especially the merchant marine communities, the ones on the coast, put in place safeguards. So they knew that an infected person could spread plague to another infected person. So if we're back in Norway, they essentially established offshore quarantines where if a ship is coming in to trade goods, you couldn't just bring the ship into harbor and have no control over who or what gets off board. You would have to stay a little bit offshore, and only uninfected sailors or crewmen could then come into town. And this was a way of these cities, which are in pretty remote places, remaining plague-free and trying to protect themselves and putting in place as much as they could preventative measures to keep their population safe. And it totally worked. When a ship that had, let's say, half the crew had plague, they wouldn't come into the shore. They would stop, and the ones without plague would come in and do the trading. Everything was working fine.
Ideally. Right.
And that worked fine when a few of the crew members had plague. It worked fine when some of the crew members had plague, or even many of the crew members had plague. It did not work so well when everybody died.
Right. And this is where our story takes the turn to Norway. In 1349, an English merchant ship carrying wool set out northward. They were bound for the north, and along the way, they realized they had lost the lottery of disease, and crew members were getting the plague. They didn't all die at once, but they were dying one by one. And not being dummies themselves, the people who were surviving or who had not yet contracted the plague attempted to quarantine the sick. They said, these people have the plague. Again, they don't know that it's carried by these parasites on these smaller creatures, or on these parasites, these fleas that are probably on all of them to some degree. So they try to quarantine the people who are ill, and it doesn't work. They're a buck short and a day late.
I mean, that's the thing. when everyone on the ship dies, you have no control over what happens to the ship. And so, you know, let's go back to the way we started this show. We have this looming, hulking, empty vessel, somewhat devoid of human life, but teeming with rats. The rats still have fleas on them. There's still plague on them. And so we're near the town of Bergen in Norway. Mm-hmm. Normally, this would have been, you know, not a great situation, but they would have dealt with it. But no, this ship had a completely dead crew and just it ran aground. It crashed.
Which is such an unfortunate lottery to win, because it could have also plausibly just drifted off into the sea and then sank in rough water.
The very last living person aboard could have thrown down an anchor.
Or scuttled it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But didn't. And that's the thing. It's literally a ship of death. And that, you know, there's not too much ridiculous about this history today, but that to me is what touches on the verge of the absurd, in that it's so scary, so cinematic and terrifying to have a literal ship of death going to the frosty north, where it also seems like sort of a death metal kind of way to go.
Yeah.
You know, and that music is super popular up in those parts. But to have this, yeah, just a ship of death crashing into your town, despite all your preventative measures and everything you've tried to do to save your town from plague, ship of death's going to get you.
The ship of death's going to get you. To the tune of the rhythm is going to get you. I think our syllables are slightly off, but the gist is there. And this is a terrifying moment. I think that's why Casey and I both felt so enthralled when you were painting that image for us at the beginning, because this, like most of the scariest of stories, is a true story. And when we say that it ran aground in Bergen Harbor, we don't mean that it just infected the people of Bergen Harbor. Contemporary accounts, although exaggerated, seem to indicate that around a third of the population of Norway died. And the thing with, you know, I think you made a tremendous point about how much margin of error we have with any kind of population estimate or death toll estimate for things that occurred at this point in time in history. Despite that, you have to admit that even if it was just 20%, it's still one out of every five people dying.
It's a lot of people.
So it's more than one out of every five, possibly around one out of every three people died because of this one ship washed up in this one place. And it didn't stop there, did it? Because it expanded beyond Norway.
Yeah, it just all over. And what this really reminds me of is, you know, in any zombie film or TV show where the people have taken all the safeguards they can, they've holed up inside of a safe house, right? And then someone makes a fatal mistake. One bite comes through, and then that's it. Then things crumble from there. So all the Walking Dead and all those series and shows, there may be something to it. That's how society crumbles, perhaps.
Perhaps. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. And here's another thing. This plague, this catastrophe, affected Norway in more ways than one. It did not just kill one-fifth to one-third of the population. It made a fundamental impact on their culture and folklore, which remains in the modern day.
Yeah, this is not a story just about corpses and people dying. I mean, the experience of the Black Death and the Black Plague really manifests itself not just with a death count, but in the culture, in the story of Pesta, the witch. Pesta, as listeners may guess for themselves rightly, is, you know, related to the terms of pestilence and pustules.
But not pesto.
Everything that I just thought, because of what you just said, is disgusting to me and disgusting to everyone. So,
yeah, but I had to do it.
Yeah, sorry. No, so pesta, right? So yeah. Pesta is, in Norwegian folklore, this witch, a harbinger of doom and death, she's the embodiment of the plague. But she's not an embodiment of complete annihilation, right? Because the plague mm-hmm. didn't kill everyone. So what do we know about the story of Pesta and who she is and what happens if you encounter her on a dark and gloomy Norwegian road?
Oh, yes. Check this out, Christopher. I love the way you're differentiating, too, between pestilence and straight death, right? They're two very different but related things.
Yeah. In this case, they're usually, you know, that Venn diagram is almost just a circle. But
yes. Yeah, yeah.
But it's not always that way.
It's not always that way, but it's a tremendously unfortunate occurrence to encounter Pesta. You see, Pesta travels from one village to the next. She has a broomstick, but she's also doubled down. She possesses a rake. If you happen upon the witch Pesta with her rake, then you know she will spare some of the people in your community. But if she begins sweeping with her broomstick, there's no point in running.
You're dead. And so is everyone around you. Yeah, that's the thing. So Pesta, the embodiment, not just of death, but the embodiment of this specific type of death linked to this illness, if she rakes through your community, those claws will tear up your loved ones, your neighbors. But there are gaps between the teeth of a rake, and some people will make it their way through. But if she's sweeping with a broom, you're all done for. And it's just it's a really creepy, really kind of terrifying embodiment of this experience to mm-hmm. to think that it's not just something that happens, but that there's some will behind it, that there's this terrifying woman in a deep red skirt who will just clean the earth as she sees fit. Mm-hmm. And you and your friends and neighbors have little to do with the way things turn out.
And there's a fatalism there as well, you know, because your odds of survival are already very, very low. The best you can hope is that some survive. I do want to point out one myth-busting thing here.
Let's do it.
That may be of interest to many of us listening. You know those really cool mask that they always show the doctors wearing?
Yeah, they show up in like in Brazilian carnival and in mm-hmm. New Orleans, mm-hmm. and then also in the sci-fi remake of the 12 Monkeys series.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Those pestilence masks, the way that they're depicted is this. The concept being, before they were totally taken over by goth kids in this country, the concept was that the people wearing them were protecting themselves from exposure to diseased bodies, and that long bird bill snout-looking thing is actually a container for herbs, and that the herbs would be ignited sometimes and that they would gently burn.
And the mask you're talking about has got that sort of conical,
yes.
long proboscis that's yeah. sort of like creepy bird, mm-hmm. Ibis, Egyptian god mm-hmm. kind of vibe going on.
Right, right, right. Some sort of abstract attempt at rendering an anteater.
So there's a myth about that? Is that not a thing?
There's no concrete evidence that people in the 14th century were wearing these, and medical historians were wearing these at the time. And medical historians will say that they were not invented until 300 years later, when a 16th century French doctor named Charles Delorme designed what could be described as one of the world's earliest hazmat suits. So it did occur in response to the plague, but in a later wave of the plague.
Okay.
That's the other myth that I think we busted pretty effectively.
There was not just one Black Death.
It was no. Things just kept being terrible.
Great.
Great. We don't have to end it that way.
No, let's talk about some good news.
Yeah.
I don't know how much good news this is, but Ben, let me ask you. You seem like the kind of person who likes all of these things. Do you like swimsuit models?
I like in general.
Yeah, in general.
Yeah, sure.
Swimsuit models.
I'm not opposed to swimsuits or people modeling.
Okay. How do you feel about European men in flashy cravats?
I'm in. Okay. Yeah. I'm not opposed to either of these things.
What about zombified Knights Templar?
I mean, if I have to choose between the three, I'm going with number three.
What if I told you, uh-huh. Ben, Ben Bolin, that you could, in one film, have all three of those.
I would say thank you for saving my weekend, Christopher Hasiotis.
All right. 1974's film The Ghost Galleon is a film that I want to put on your radar then. Mm-hmm. It's a Spanish movie. It's not great. I don't know that it's even good, but it's really enjoyable. It's in Spanish, it's called El Buque Maldito, which means like the damned vessel or the ship of the damned.
Yeah.
But in English, it's the Ghost Galleon. It's really campy, but it's got a lot of zombie Knights Templar who there are these two swimsuit models who see a ghost ship off the coast and decide to hey, let's go see what's on that ghost ship. The answer is zombies. So, zombified Knights Templar who have come back from, I guess, crusading. And then there's like some real like flashy dudes wearing ascots and trying to punch skeletons. This is another thing I will share with the Facebook community group. I will put the trailer for The Ghost Galleon up for your enjoyment, and you can decide for yourself if you want to dig into the film as a whole. I love it.
Uh-huh.
I also really love low-budget, questionably acted horror from the 70s.
Yes, as you should. Christopher, thank you for this recommendation. You beat me to the punch. We have to put the trailer up. I'm going to watch this after we finish recording today. I did, while you were talking about this, I did remember one piece of good news that baffled me. I kid you not, this is actual good news from the series of pandemics known collectively as the Black Plague or the Bubonic Plague. There is a book, which I may have mentioned in previous episodes, by a fellow named Norman Cantor. The name of this book is In the Wake of the Plague. When I first read this book, there's something that Cantor tosses aside in a fairly cavalier fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that there is compelling evidence that the evolutionary pressure of the Black Plague led to the HIV-resistant genes that exist in parts of Europe today. Because you remember, we've seen those stories in years past about bone marrow transplant recipients who also find that their HIV, viral load has gone down and then it has disappeared. It appears that there is compelling evidence, while not 100%, there's compelling evidence that the same infection and disease that killed so many people in Europe, Eurasia, and beyond may have made us more resistant to HIV and ultimately AIDS.
No, that's fascinating. And yeah, there are myriad ways you can look at a terrible, terrible instance in history like the Black Death and glom some sort of positive from it. I mean, that is a wonderful thing, and not the sort of thing you would ever expect, but it's the way history unfolds. I mean, there are a number of other things attributed to the Black Death and kind of what society had to do afterwards. There's an idea that a lot of the smaller universities around Europe really developed because people didn't want to travel when they went to school. Because the more you travel, the more you risk coming across people who had plague. So more schools had – or more communities had to develop their own local universities and colleges. And so that led to some education. It is also credited with perhaps popularizing English across the continent. The idea was that so many learned monks and scholars passed away because of Black Death that more people who spoke the vulgar tongues, your German, your English, they had to assume those positions of power in universities, in higher learning, and so English became more widespread. It's the same idea why the printing press had to be invented, because so many monks died, they didn't have enough people to hand copy Bibles.
Oh.
So they needed to find a way to kind of adapt to a situation where you've lost a significant portion of your population. You know, whether you can say it's a one-to-one causal relationship is a little tricky, but these are some theories that are out there, and I think they're pretty interesting.
That's fascinating, and it feels like we are on the verge of a completely new conversation, the upsides of terrible events throughout world history. That may be an episode for another day, but for now, why don't we throw it to you, fellow ridiculous historians? What are some of the unintended, how do we put it, silver linings of terrible events throughout human history? I think we illustrated just a couple with the Black Plague to keep what may indeed be our most death metal of episodes from being completely grimy and grim. But let us know. You can visit us on Facebook, as you said, Christopher, at our community page, Ridiculous Historians. You can see Casey, Noel, Christopher Hasiotis himself, and yours truly dropping in to field questions, to check out and share some of the amazing stories throughout our species' collective adventures. Let's see, what else? In the meantime?
In the meantime, I have a question for any listeners here who happen to be round about northern Wales, maybe over near Liverpool. I read about a ship of death that they've got going on right there. It just launched. Apparently, for the past 30 years, there's been a ship called the Duke of Lancaster, which was kind of run aground and abandoned near, I think the town is called Holwell or Holywell in Wales, northern Wales. And there's this company who kind of, I think is comparable to like escape rooms here in the U.S., and they kind of put on those haunted houses. But they've turned this ship into a ship of death, and you can kind of go on there and experience a zombie attack on the ship.
What?
Yeah, I just read it. I remember reading about this at the end of 2018, and apparently this is a thing that has opened in this year, 2019. Zombie Infection is, I believe, the company. Not that we're giving props or speaking to their merit, but if anyone's listening who is in kind of like around the corner from Liverpool and you've been on this ship of death, or you want to go on the ship of death and report back, I'd like to hear about it.
Me too. Sign me up. I want to hear if it lives up to the hype. You can tell us about that on the aforementioned Ridiculous Historians Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can find my pal Noel on Instagram. He's at Embryonic Insider. You can find me on Instagram as well. Follow my adventures as I get kicked into and out of various countries at Ben Bolin. In the meantime, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much, as always, to super producer Casey Pegram. I know we can't see it because it's an audio podcast. And Casey, I know you can't see me do this because there's a barrier between us. But every time I say your name, I like to throw my right arm wide in a grand gesture towards you, sir. We'd also like to thank Alex Williams, who composed our track. As always, thanks to Noel Brown. And thanks to you, Christopher Hasiotis. You know, I know after we did our Grifter episode, you had me questioning everything. So I'm still going to stick with the alias you provided when we met all those years ago.
Remain questioning. It's good to be a skeptic. Thanks for having me. It's been really, really nice talking about the end of so many people's lives.
We'll see you again soon.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.